concern, like my predecessors, preachers, I'd like to invite, to welcome you at the 8th Annual Capital League Forum in Limassol, and to satisfy my friend Nikos, I will say that Martin from Crete, indicating the ties between Crete and Cyprus. I will say it in Greek and I will translate. Τις Κρέτης σιγουροκορφές γυρούν θάρρος και αντρία. Και θάλασσες της Κύπρου απαντούν για την ελευθερία. Okay, let me translate. The mountains of Crete extol the courage and bravery, and the seas of Cyprus reply for the freedom. Our panel today can be summarized with some key words, that is, competitiveness of the fleet, ZNZ fuels, that stands for zero neon zero fuels, or new fuels, innovative technologies, strategies, and upgrades. Allow me to, before we proceed with the question and the discussion, to present the members of the panel. I would start with Mr. Peters, who is the chairman and CEO of Europe Dry Eurosys, founder of Europulp, and he's at the top of the pyramid as a naval architect, entrepreneur, and ship and the person. As a self-made owner. And so is the next panel member, who is Philippos Pyris, ex-president of the European Community Seafarers Association and chairman and CEO of the Michelin Navigation. He's famous for his innovative designs and
also the self-thinking. Also, let the survey feel separate. 3D. 3D. In the big workshop, he self made the support.
The traditional shipping company, Arid Company, say, John
Helen, Mr. Dr. Lucas Dattaris, who is a techno-economic major, and he has been throughout the whole world, from Salonika to Toronto to interior ports. Then, representing the majors, Kostas Tavvedakis, is a chemical process engineer in the University of Surrey. I would say Mr. Water, or better, Mr. Seawater. And he has, although he's a young guy, he has accomplished a lot. That cost us the sky of the week. Last, we have artists in your opinions from Gipsy, is Bill and the chief business officer. Then I will tell you an anecdote which I found out from within her company. Once she went inside the meeting of investors and she said, I have developed an artificial intelligence that can find anything on the deep sea. Even by God, he's says Wiles, and says, we still work in that algorithm. But for sure, you can do it, and also secrets, also ancient artifacts. No problem.
Yes, sir.
So, let's proceed with business. I will start with Mr. Stambidakis, who's from the founder and general manager of Irma Group. You know, it started with ballast water, but they make a lot of water things. Kostas, we have a lot of technical innovation. What is the most promising to reduce the emissions in the future?
Good morning, John. Good morning to everyone. Thank you so much for your kind words. It's always a pleasure being back. It's my seventh, I think, Cyprus, capital in Cyprus. And I'm Nicola and the rest of the Cypriot colleagues allow me to feel like being part of this, family and of this, journey. Back to the question. Yes, indeed, we need to do a lot of things because we have this 2050 target, the decarbonization target. With alternative fuels being the ultimate solution, but not being available where we want them and in the quantities we want them, I will use an expression that Mark used a couple of weeks ago in Capital in Athens, that the decarbonization trip passes through technology. So let me summarize a few of the technologies that they look promising as of today, and I'm saying as of today because this is an evolving market and we see a lot of changes within a short period of time. Starting with the energy-saving devices, with the low-hanging fruits like the propeller caps and the propeller ducts and the fins, which will save us about 3 to 5% maximum of fuel consumption and eventually to emissions production. We can move to the more exotic, but still promising and proved technologies. And I'm referring to this, of the wind assistant propulsion systems. We've seen, this, one, two, or three, third generation, wind assistant propulsion system that they can offer savings up to 20%, depending on the voyage of the vessel. Going to the very promising, old technology, but with a new design, and this is the air lubrication. The passive air lubrication has drawn a lot of attention lately with installations which gives savings between 4 to 8%. Moving to the electrification, we see that the variable frequency drives can save a lot of power on board the vessel, on the machinery equipment. And then we have the AMP, the cold irony, or the onshore power supply, where it saves a lot of energy when the vessels are at berth. Instead of burning fossil fuels, they're plugging in the network and they get energy, green energy from the network. And last but not least, and I'm not touching on Algis's field, it's the carbon capture, onboard carbon capture and storage. Allow me to say that this is the technology that will give the kiss of life on fossil fuels and also on existing vessels, young vessels, something between 7 and below years old. So this is a technology that is a mature technology. There are some hiccups related to the chain of where to give the capture carbon and how much this will be, but there are a lot of investments lately around the globe and soon we'll have solutions on this. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much, Kostas. And we do hope that the Secretary Nathan will provide the legislation to show the figures related to carbon capture. Let's cross our fingers. Artists. The same is the digestion, post hand-to-hand with decarbonization. What role do data analysis and digitalization play to improve the fleet competitiveness during this transition?
Yes, sir. Hello. Yeah, good morning. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here in Cyprus. A ship is basically a massive factory in the middle of the ocean, very complicated, and they're very expensive. And, like, At the moment, like for many companies, what usually happens is that you have Stavros, the second officer who's on the vessel, takes a little pencil, goes and notes down what's happening on the ship, to send in a report to shore. So family-owned businesses that spend a lot of money on very, very expensive equipment don't actually know what's happening on a day, like on a per-second basis constantly, what's happening. A lot of times the data is a bit inaccurate. So the solution that comes in here is something called high-frequency data. And it's a very accessible solution, and it exists at the moment. So you go from low-resolution solutions like sea trials, fuel tables, to something with real-time modeling per second and have a per-second understanding of what's going on. And how do you really do this? It's tons of steps, and it's a digital transformation that takes some time. So you start off by buying sensors and putting them on the vessel. Then the company has to start collecting the data. Then the most difficult part, you have to fix the data and make it make sense. And that's where most people actually stick and have issues. Then once you actually understand what's happening, you can monitor what's happening. Then you can optimize what's happening. And then you can automate what's happening. And where AI comes in is mostly on the part of data quality, making it better. So there's lots of different methodologies for, like, my favorite one is transfer learning, where there's a big database of data from other vessels and other customers, and you can go in and kind of fill in the gaps where there are issues and increase the quality even more. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Wittles, financial question. What factors do we consider when we decide in times of uncertainty, if we're going to proceed with a new building or a retrofit an existing one?
Yeah. Thank you. So, the decision is quite difficult because you don't have clarity at this stage. When you have a fleet, and we have a fleet of several eight vessels, we need, first of all, to take decisions about the existing kit. It's basically help the company towards reduced energy consumption and advancements in AI in the company. And all this situation, all these vessels that have a specific horizon, so I would say that we need to allow 5 to 10 years we can deal with existing ships. We can't improve further the ships after, let's say, 5 to 10 years, depending on the technologies that they have. So then you need to go towards new bits. Of course, now the question is that the NPC has not taken any steps yet, and we expect the NEDC to pay this day to take decisions. And as long as we don't have decisions, it's quite tricky what vessels we order. For example, if you order a dual fuel vessel, there's an additional cost. If the cost, if the vessel is LNG, the additional cost is substantially higher compared to what the a standard vessel has. Maybe methanol would be a little bit cheaper, or ammonia, yet we need to see the engine of ammonia that would be used to burn ammonia. So how can you take a decision if you don't have the legislation in place? Now the problem lies in the future with the existing penalties and market-based measures, because by having all these measures, there will be an incentive to take decisions, talk in a specific direction. And we need to understand that whatever we do, until today, until recently, we were paying only for the carbon, the atom of the molecule, the CO2. Now we need to pay also for the oxygen, because we have here indications that we will not be able to survive after 30, 40, 50 years with the energy base. So there is a specific cost on this, and this is high. because we need to pay a price for the oxygen that we are using. And this will increase inflation, and we have substantial problems. So probably the people are not ready to pay more for the commodities that they are, they are transported. So the situation, the legislation needs to be taken quickly, made in this NBC degree, so we know what exactly we should do in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. I realize each of this question can be a topic in a whole panel. We don't have the natural time to do that. And I'm going to Mr. Peters, that I ask another interesting question. Having the very fast development
of
technology, what is your view of how what we are going to see in the fleet competitiveness over the next decade? What would be the picture?
Hello, everybody. We are here to try to decide, to discuss what will happen in 10 years. We can't even say what will happen next year. So it's extremely difficult. It's extremely difficult. I can speak for what we are doing as ship owners who have traditionally been quite conservative, which has been doing what Lucas said, mainly keeping our existing ships, because, you know, for 5-10 years, I still feel quite strongly that the existing ships will continue to drive the world. So we have our existing ships, we are retrofitting them, we're doing whatever we can to improve their performance. I want to add what Konstantinos said before about what measures what one can take. We have actually retrofitted three of our vessels already with new, heavier, slower propellers, which improved the efficiency. We have even changed the bow thruster, the bow of various vessels. We've paid about $2 million per vessel, and we've achieved a 25% improvement in the fuel consumption. This is a fact. This is, has happened. It's on a container ship, 4,000 TEU vessels, that we did the study, we checked it, and actually it works. 25% improvement in the fuel consumption is very, very significant. So this is what we are doing with the horizon of keeping existing ships trading for 5-10 more years. To look beyond that, we know that ships will have to change, but they will change gradually because we have the existing ships. People today are building ships with dual possibilities. The biggest part of the automobile today can have alternative fuels, and they are dual fuels. This is an expensive ship if it has to be a dual vessel. I don't like that that extra cost for a fuel that I'm not sure that will be the one that will prevail at the end of the day. So we are building our new ships with the existing technology, state-of-the-art technology, the old fuel, and we hope for carbon capture to work. We hope that we don't know what will happen. It's a huge risk, though, to build ships today, and one of the reasons why people are trying to avoid building too many ships. And the order book, indeed, generally across the sectors, is quite low, because people don't know what to build. Some of them are building dual fuel ships, LNG mostly, but also methanol, thinking about ammonia, the first vessels and all that stuff. We will have to see what happens, but the traditional ship owners will keep on to the existing ships, try to improve them, and if you're a big company, you can afford to build, let's say, a methanol ship. We saw in the previous presentation that one method was used to satisfy the EU for 15 persons. So a big company can afford that. And they can afford to take some risks with their investments, try to guess what the regulation will be. But at the end of the day, the regulation is going to drive whatever happens, and we have to work around the regulation being forward-looking in that we want to reduce the emissions, but also realistic in that we want to do things that can happen. So a very difficult task for the IMO and the NEPC and every regulator around this.
Thank you, and let's keep the fact that they managed to get 25% without the employment or the utilization of any new fuels. So this is the report. And with that in mind, I will ask Mr. Pelis, what about these new fuels? What if the bunkering infrastructure does not scale up, fails to scale up globally and is regionally fragmented, and some of the ships cannot find the fuel they need? So what, how can you mitigate this eventuality?
Thank you, John. Thank you, Nicholas, also for having me here. I give a couple of words of cues of what you said, John. I'll talk at Israel. I think the production of fuels will be helped. Not the tension. Already you go in the official IMO website, there is a light table where it is at least more or less 16 bunker stations that they are able to offer both alternative fuels like methanol or ammonia. We are split more or less in altitudes, but only like China, then followed by Europe and then US, two, three terminals which we were shipping companies. So, I don't believe there is any station, any, like, a funky station work, rather than reduction of the fuels. What is, nation, maybe the fear of having the film, nuclear enriched fuel and having a standard vessel, this is not the case. I think all dual-fuel vessels, in particular those we have or in design or we are constructing, they are dual-fuel because they have much away built fuels in methane, so this is a very simple operation of methane. But they are split more or less. So
we have to do that. We have to tell dual-fuel. This is ignored.
Yes, correct. There are, so there are all the classifications that here we know that, we have, a little more endurance, creation, better not sure in other cases, but we is 10,500 nights. And we get our 10,000 with, pure fuel. But the good factor, because of the calorific by both methane, we needed a larger tax, so we put short the bottom of the accumulation. And to achieve, the half of the endurance with fossil fuel, it may define some of the traditional fuel tax as in weight spaces. So practically, we have half of the traditional fossil fuel tax as in weight spaces. In that case, there is no availability of metal anywhere. And we will still get and get the void spaces based on actual classifications subjected to in standard fossil fuel, and we will continue that fossil fuel. This the power park scenario helps on the other side. What we have done is Qatar, we see already some future fuel tenters for 5 with extension to 10 years, stopping us from being able to retire. We are waiting for a year and a half day plus testing the repercussions. With deliveries at the major hubs, which we nominate in the country. So we have about 50% of our needs test for the alternative fuel. This was the assumption that this should be there only on alternative fuel. So in that, we do still have a risk, but maybe this production council will not scale up to the level that they have as a very clear time. But this is it. There is a risk everywhere. What we additionally doing is that we are using all these compliance mechanisms, like, for example, using biofuel or certain tapes, you know, you don't color the deficit that can be created by the rest of the fleet. We are using, we are not yet using, but we have been planning our business practice, the carbon assets, and eventually, the renewable energy certificates to, power our, the needs. And, just as a conclusion, it case that no alternative will be available. You talk maximally to write off the spec, extract this from the hundred ships, and continue running with fossil fuels. Finish it.
Thank you. And since we talk about fossil fuels, I would like to check, to ask the doctor this, what is the favorite of the alternative fuel?
To get that back. But I feel like it's a nice word. First of all, I believe that, if we didn't consider alternative fuels, we probably need to speak about fuels which are produced from renewable energy sources and not LNG, which is also fossil fuel. Although I believe that an initial decision after 12 years with LNG or fuels with LNG would offer substantial benefits because today vessel has 30% it used energy, it increased energy efficiency, it reduced energy consumption compared to the traditional one, and it plus 80% of what the LNG can offer, it was about 50%. So that would be a good intermediate step for the transition, let's say, for the next 10 years. But this has not happened. So we try to find which are alternative fuels and which is the best. So with methanol, for example, that we have two blood fuel methanol vessels, looks good because, it's only double the size of the HFO. Firstly, it's not so, toxic as ammonia, and, the engine exists, the technology exists, so maybe what order you are shipping that week. Ammonia, this is also, which exists right now, and it produces from renewable energy sources be used. There are substantial risks related with the use of ammonia, because in the first accident which happened worldwide, the ammonia will be banned completely because circulation is up very instantly. Hydrogen, which is has a lesser energy density compared to methanol, needs a substantial space in the constructions on board the vessel. I don't believe it will work. Again, I want to mention that the one big solution can be the carbon capture, because the carbon capture that we have a solution work. What to do with the carbon? There might be a solution there for the existing fleet. As a person, I was supporting the idea, I would like to support it, but it's very premature, and so I hope has not yet taken any decisions compared to what the legislation will be in relation to have.
I'm
So I would say methanol probably is the best, although it does not exist anywhere. Only if, only if IMO takes decisions about levy and about CFS that would make the consumption of HFO substantially more expensive, especially after 2030. Only then there will be production of alternative fuels, and I think that the industry of technology is ready to take this opportunity. But it's a political decision, and we need to say also to wait to see what the United States have to say with the new administration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would like to ask artists, how do you guide your clients to apply what you advise them to do here to enhance their energy efficiency?
It works this time, I figured it out, great. Technology adoption is very, very complicated.
So
this is why I thought as the SaaS, software as a service model, so like a Netflix subscription. You don't just buy, you know, a glass and suddenly it works, but everything's great. Based on my consulting background, how I started my career a while back, it's basically a very big digital transformation project, and you're buying an experience. You're investing in an experience that takes a while. There are two main elements to it. What I mentioned before, there's the data element, which is an iterative process. So it's quite interesting because we have some customers, for example, who don't have any data and you're going to collect it for them. So sometimes it takes time to do this, but sometimes it's easier because if you're collecting it, you're not actually doing anything with it. It doesn't necessarily mean that the quality is good and that you're actually collecting the right amount of data. So you go back and forth and you solve all of this. And this is usually at the early stages where companies that have very, very good technical, strong people in the team are the best ones to work with. But when you move along, the human element comes up playing, at which point the key to success is very, very simple. It's just to have good project managers who go in and they just push and push and push and get everyone in the team involved. Especially shipping is quite unique because you have, so when you're doing like routing optimization, speed optimization, you have the crew on every single vessel that needs to be trained and needs to be aligned with it. So you have to be talking to many, many people, both internally within the organization and as a supplier or partner. So it's just, you just have to be realistic that it's a painful process and it takes time, but the benefits do come later on.
Very good. I'm glad to ask one of you, last question. It's a wonderful, glad discussion. It's one or much in two sentences in the interest of time. So the ethical question is, do you think that the shipping industry needs more or maybe more and more stringent regulation? Or do you feel that we are already overrated? So this is what happens.
This question could be a whole panel.
Yes, maybe.
Well, I think that the issue we have with regulations at the moment is that they're really uncertain and we don't actually know what's going to happen. We don't know which fuels are going to come. What we do know is that there are going to be more and they are going to increase. And as an industry, it's quite fragmented. So there's a big part of the industry that is waiting to see what's going to happen and they're not ready. And if you bring in more, it's going to be really problematic. There's quite a few in the middle who are investing in solutions at the moment. So they're just feeling the pain I was describing before. And then you have a small number of companies who are at the forefront, who have been doing this for quite some time now, maybe even like 5 years. And in their case, it's actually beneficial for them to have more regulation because they're ahead of the curve. But I would say, as a total no, because most are not ready.
Can do it in one word. No. What we need is a uniformity and clarity. This is what we're lacking at the moment. But
I think that that carbonization path is overregulated, and we need those two turns in order to move forward and contribute on reducing CO2 emissions for this 3% that our industry contributes worldwide.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Still.
This is a philosophical question, right? This is, Mr. Trump is saying we don't need regulation. Europe has too much regulation. Too much regulation stifles growth, stifles entrepreneurship. America wants us to leave it alone. We don't care about the future. We do what the markets tell us. I have to say I am a European, more in favor of regulation which comes as a consequence of what is best for humanity in the long run. So in the long run, we know that we have a very significant issue with the climate change, and we have to act on that. Economically, it's not the best thing. So we have to have regulation, but we have to try and balance regulation with reality, because it's not easy. We have to keep it uniform, and I have to admit that I think that the IMO is doing a very good job in trying to balance these two things. So uniform regulation across the world, I think, is necessary if we want to achieve the goals that we want to achieve, which are good for humanity in the longer term.
I
think what we need is global regulation, out there and whatever. We need to move fast on as able. Look to talk with the regulator. It happened occasion by having that these regional regulations which take this out the industry laws.
Lucas,
let's turn the thing. We need a clear and brave regulations towards decarbonization.
I'm tempted to say it was for thinking about that. What about the audience? Who is a yes and who is a no? Let's start with a yes. What about the does not
like and what to apply to what you ask? One sentence, one sentence.
The high
please.
My requirement have been with related money in order to make some
front of Alabama. All right,
John.
You think
that's the plan? In Japan, right now, it's not a critical market
for the future of
how the Bruno Shane, if you get the first two levels in partners, the regulation.
Because
what you said,
the shipping authority, but they got no power in the structure. So, I would like to say that, Mr. Chair,
Jerry, if I just may ask, because I'm not sure what way, and that's the analyst, is one issue I think we haven't heard, which is maybe not part of the topic, but you talk about the alternative fuel silo, you know, ammonia, methanol, whatever. To me, has anybody given a bit of real thought consideration to crew? I mean, the education and the training, which is the Kurdish today, especially when you talk about ammonia, which is a dangerous fuel with my guy, and by the way, I'm not gentrified, you know, I've learned things listening to you and the colleagues over the years and having a bit of technical knowledge. But how are they going to cope with that situation? Risk factors high. I mean, typically an engineer on a ship is fueled by a ammonia. He's looking just be equipped like a NASA sign, I mean, that we have to move. I mean, the danger factors are horrific, aren't they? With ammonia. How's that going? How are they going to cope with it throughout?
But I'm sure we are going to share the proper rooms, the proper attaining, the proper studies. The intrusion start this way. Against leakers, and like the answering gun guy does, if there is an accident, this is the death of Mrs. Samuel. Finishing the
we have.
Chris,
well, I'd like to thank the panelists for the very interesting interventions.
And
there is a paradox when it comes to the DIGA framework. we all call for global solutions and legal certainty, but at the same time, the legal framework by nature has to be technology neutral. So it's up to the market to be innovative, to scale it up, and for the forecasting for the future. So IMO would never decide of the EU on which direction the alternative fuel technology will go, but is to set the framework for all alternative fuels to be promoted to scale up. So the paradox is that, okay, we need one single legal framework, but at the same time, by nature, the legal framework has to be cloud neutral.
Thank you. Thank you.
Keep in mind that the proposal of the EU that I involved with the midterm measure is much, much more stringent than the sheerly human doubts. So we worked, you had the presentation by Mr. Davis, but real life, so we don't know what the EU is doing. Hopefully, there's going to withdraw the sheerly human doubts. With that, I'd like to ask you to give a round of applause for the